The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Welcome. It is Wheels Up Wednesday time. That means Eric Peters will join me here in about 20 minutes or so. Always a great conversation on cars and politics and so much more. Given that Tesla is just taking a real dupa-dupa in the stock market over the last couple of days, and we're kind of wondering where that's going to go. We'll have a little conversation on that. Actually, U.S. stock futures, according to Bloomberg and others, are falling this morning. It's everyone's kind of waiting for what Fed Chief Powell is going to say. It's only been a few days since he last spoke, but apparently the markets are kind of concerned about what's going on because you know what it's like right now. Stronger economic news in any form is bad news for the stock market because what they want is super cheap money so that the punch bowl gets brought back in. And before, there was a conversation about Jerome Powell saying, yeah, we're going to cut the interest rates five or six times this year. And almost nobody's thinking that's going to happen right now. Inflation has been coming in hotter, a lot hotter than expected. And even the inflation numbers that they're talking about, let's be honest, if you go out and you purchase gasoline, you know, they always strip out the stuff that we regular people buy. They strip it out, and they don't even look at the price of housing as an example, as an inflationary issue, that it's going to be just the owner's equivalent rent. And there's all sorts of little sleights of hand that the federal government ends up doing to modify inflation to make it look lower because they don't want to be paying more for Social Security. They don't want to be paying more for Social Security benefits in other places than other people and benefits that end up having cost of living adjustments. They just don't want to do that. And they also have a goal to make it look lower so that they can find people who will buy the bonds. I know it's kind of a crazy stuff. And there is talk that if they were looking at, we ought to go to Shadow Stats. I haven't gone to ShadowStats.com for a while. Take a look at that because John Williams in his Shadow Stats place was pretty interesting because he would always calculate inflation with the way they used to do it back in the 1980s. And it always showed the inflation roaring way higher than what the Fed's been saying for a long, long time. But this is it. You know, it's the Kabuki Theater of a post-constitutional United States of America. But everyone's waiting for what's going to happen with Powell because the Fed is the market right now, kind of the reality of where we find ourselves. And everybody wants the cheap money, or I should say many people want the cheap money to prevail. Interest rates for a 30-year fixed, 6.93% last month. Now it's like 6.91% this month, so it's down just a little bit, but it's just kind of noise. And shares in Tesla fell 1% in pre-market trading. Tesla fell 5% yesterday. Big deal. And Tesla is another example. And by the way, you know, I have mixed emotions, as you know, about Elon Musk. There are some things he say that are really interesting, but he's not an ally. He's still the transhumanist demon, as far as I'm concerned. Did I say that out loud? Okay. But at least he likes to have lots of kids. It's great to see people having lots of kids. What, 9 kids with 3 different women? It's fine. Doesn't have to marry anybody. It's so bourgeois. But anyway, it's dropped 5%. But still, the price-to-earning ratio for Tesla is still somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 1. You give Elon Musk a buck, and maybe he'll give you a penny per year. That's kind of what we're talking about, you know, price-to-earnings ratio. It doesn't earn very much. So it's been a speculative play for a long, long time. And so it looks like maybe with the end of the free money and the EV thing going on and how he's been promising that we're going to have 50,000 electric Tesla semis on the road by this time. And, of course, that hasn't happened. And Eric Peters and I have been talking for years. You know, at some point you have to make money. You just can't make money on tax credits so that other car manufacturers can still sell internal combustion engines. It's not a sustainable kind of business model. So anyway, we'll have a talk about that with Erica, along with other things this morning. Another interesting story about employment. Wall Street Journal reporting that the jobs numbers are not adding up, and immigration helps explain why. I wonder how much of it illegal immigration. U.S. Employment figures contain a mystery that has left many economists scratching their heads. How is the country generating so many jobs, even while the unemployment rate has drifted up? The emerging consensus, a surge in immigration that suggests the economy can keep on adding jobs because of immigrants. All right. Other stocks to watch this morning, Disney. Disney shareholder meeting is due to start 1 in the afternoon, actually 10 o'clock this morning, West Coast time. And they're waging a proxy fight with Disney. And what will really be interesting to see is how much money they're making from streaming. One thing that we've been noticing a lot here, I've been checking out the financial blogs, that the streaming services are not being treated very well by Wall Street. They may be getting more people. A lot of people may be watching them, but they're not particularly making a lot of money. In fact, they tend to be money losers for the companies that are putting them on. Disney, Magnolia Network, all these other things. I think we've reached the point where people are just like saying, okay, we're going to spend a lot for internet connection, and then we're going to send every major network in the entire country $19 a month or $9 a month or $7 a month or whatever it is to stream all that stuff. And people are just going, nope. And I'm kind of wondering if we're getting to the point where going back to the cable may end up costing us less, you know, if you were to actually add up all the various services. No, we'll see about that. Other money this morning, Donald Trump posts $175 million bond. He secured that bond to guarantee his civil fraud judgment. All right. So far, so good. I haven't checked the price of Donald Trump's stock this morning. You know, the one that had the IPO last week? It lost a whole bunch of value the other day because the stock markets have been having some problems. And then I guess some news came out that there are a lot of people on Truth Social, but it wasn't making much money, kind of like the streaming services. All right. And we also have some interesting news going on around here in Southern Oregon, both in Ashland and in Grants Pass. A couple of stories that are worthy of note. We'll touch on some of those here in just a minute, too. You're on the Bill Myers Show on KMED and KCMD. And the number 770-5633 if you want to join in today.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Rentier Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs with their exclusive offer. Discounted Oregon e-deal certificates good for a whopping $75 off any service. Whether it's a routine checkup, oil change, brake repair, or full-on engine overhaul, trust the expert technicians to get the job done right. Visit OregonEDeals.com to snag your discounted certificate. Drive in. Save big. American Rentier Garage, across from Elmer's on Biddle.
A message from Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Thank you so much for your continued support over the years. We are very grateful. With your loyal support, we have been able to give back to our community in 2023, providing new roofing shelter to very deserving individuals. In 2024, we have been blessed with giving back to the beloved Cats organization on Ross Lane here in Medford. Stop by, adopt, or donate anytime. Stay tuned to hear how you can enter to win our next roof giveaway throughout the year.
Hurley's Tax Service has the experience to complete your taxes the way you're most comfortable with, by mail, secure email, phone, Zoom, or in person. Just call Hurley's Tax at 774-1040. What an easy number, 774-1040.
Say happy Valentine's Day to your sweetheart with a treat from Violets and Cream. This year's three-time Gold Award winner and Best of Southern Oregon invites you and your sweetheart to their Medford location where you can indulge in a giant slice of New York pizza and a delicious milkshake made with their small batch ice cream, just like the good old days, for just $10. Stop by with your sweetheart now through Valentine's Day and enjoy. This offer available exclusively at Violets and Cream Medford in the McAndrew Shopping Center.
Hi, I'm Lamont from Orleans, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Not only Eric Peters joining me here in a few minutes, but I'm also going to talk with Rebecca Boyle, because Monday is going to be the big total eclipse. We're only going to have about a 20-25% obscuring of the sun here in southwest Oregon. Out here on the west coast, we're not going to see much of that. A lot of it, the whole path of total eclipse, though, Indiana, Ohio, you know, kind of that area, some areas in the south there too. Farther back east is where it's going to be a total eclipse. But anyway, Rebecca Boyle is a moon expert, and she's written a book called Our Moon. It's actually quite interesting. And one of the most fascinating facts that she had in that book, I was taking a look at some of it, is that the moon smells like gunpowder. People that have gone to the moon, yeah, I know, I can already hear the conspiracy theorists calling, we didn't go to the moon, it was on a... A Hollywood soundstage. Okay, I'm not going there. This is not Conspiracy Theory Thursday. It's Wheels Up Wednesday. Okay? But the astronauts say that the moon smells like gunpowder. Because you'd go out there and then you'd go inside back in the capsule and then it would smell like gunpowder. Very interesting. So we'll have that. I'd like to find out if they finally settled how the moon was created. I want to ask her about that. She's going to call me in about an hour. We'll have a few minutes to talk about this and kind of the moon fun facts. Diane Linthicum is also running for state senate. And, of course, Dennis Linthicum is running, her husband, of course, a former state senator. Well, he's still a state senator, but he's going to be a former state senator at the end of the year because of Measure 113. Don't get me started. But he's running for Secretary of State. Diane Linthicum running for Dennis Linthicum's old seat. And I talked with her off and on personally over the years because she's been his chief of staff for 8 years, for two terms. But now that she's running in her own right, we'll talk with her about some of the issues. We'll have her on at 7:32. Of course, your calls and opinion always welcome at 770-5633. All right. A couple of interesting local stories that kind of, you know, City of Ashland is pretty interesting. There are interesting cats that are running the place down there. Rogue Valley Times reporting that this is another indicator that the city of Ashland has solved all of its really serious problems. All the serious problems of Ashland have been solved because they have no problem spending close to $5,000 for each new high-tech trash can that they've installed downtown. $4,783 apiece. And Dorinda Cottle, who is the city spokesperson, wrote in an emailed reply to a request for comment to the Rogue Valley Times, "It's in line with our city's commitment to enhancing tourism and maintaining clean public spaces. We've introduced a transformative upgrade." So, it's a trans trash can. I'm kidding. The trendy trash can. The transformative upgrade to our waste and recycling infrastructure. And what it is it's a solar-powered trash compactor trash can. And actually, I could see how that could be quite practical in some ways because, you know, what happens is when the bums have their needles and various other things down by Lithia Park and they need to get rid of them, they could put them in the trash compactor then instead of just throwing them on the park floor. It's a possibility. It might happen. Maybe the bums might use this. They might like this more. I don't know. But, yeah, close to $5,000 apiece. They have a solar cell on the top. And the cans also have photographs of local scenes captured by Bob Palermini, a retired professional photographer, and Jesse Smith, a senior accounting analyst for the city. And the cans can be opened by either using a foot pedal or a handle. Oh, and they come with a 5-year warranty. That's great. 5-year warranty. And so when the bums want to drop their syringes in there, all they have to do is just, you know, either touch the handle or take their foot. You know, as they fall asleep from the fentanyl overdose, they leave their foot on it. But anyway, actually, they're quite attractive. I must say they're quite attractive. But Bob Shannon Medford made me laugh because he sent me a picture of the trash can, right? He said, "Yeah, this is the trash can." But he also sent another picture of what Ashland might do next. And it's showing these euthanasia pods that they're using over in Europe. They're calling it like a death pod, you know, that sort of thing. Looks like a high-tech space coffin, you know, of some sort. He says that's obviously where we're going to be going next year. We'll have solar-powered trash cans, and then maybe we'll have solar-powered euthanasia death pods because, you know, death with dignity, you know, in the state of Oregon. Now, you might be wondering, where did the $60,000 come from for the city of Ashland to have 5,000 apiece trash cans? Solar trash cans with their compactor in it and everything like that. Now, the compactor is good because you don't have to empty them very often then, right? Because, you know, you drop the needles, the bum needles in there, and then they get crushed into the bag. And so you can probably go maybe longer between collecting. So, you know, less labor. So that would probably be okay. But 11 of them have been placed at downtown locations with a history of overflowing trash and high foot traffic, according to the Ashland Chronicle. And the $60,000 came from lodging tax revenue. So they taxed the tourists in order to do this. So they're going to see how things went over the summer. So I don't know. It actually might be pretty effective, depending on how well they work, because anything that keeps the trash from overflowing, probably a pretty good thing. I'm just hoping that it can handle needles. That's all. All right. Because, you know, you can't tell that you can't do anything that would make homeless feel uncomfortable in any town in Oregon. You know, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Oh, by the way, I think that case is going to be heard. Isn't that going to be heard next week? The city of Grants Pass suit that's going to be going up to Supreme Court. It's either next week, maybe it's a week or two. I'll check the date and get back to you on that. Maybe we can get to the point where, you know, we don't have to worry about as much about bums putting the syringes into the $5,000 trash compactors, solar-powered trash compactors in Ashland. Now, City of Grants Pass, of course, is having its problems. Because like everybody else, it's like the costs are going up and the taxes are not going up. And there's nothing that's worse for a city when the costs are going up and they have no way to get more money. So they got to find a way to get more money. Who to tax? Who can we tax that they're not going to protest? Because every other time the city of Grants Pass or Josephine County has tried to get something passed with the tax, they get crushed. They just get crushed. It's like the voters go to the city of Grants Pass every time it wants to raise taxes and essentially take a baseball bat and say, "We said no." Boom, boom. They're kind of like clubbing it like a baby seal. You know, just about every time they've done this. So now they want to go after big box stores. So they're looking at this. They tried the restaurant sales tax. No, that didn't work, right? Daily Courier reporting that in February, a council majority voted in favor of a motion expressing their intent to put the food and beverage tax. And now Monday of this week, though, a majority of the city council backtracked and said that they want a roundtable discussion with community leaders about fire and police department needs and funding. And so the talk is to put a tax on the big box stores, big box retailers, you know, the big box stores. And it would be like, you know, Target and, you know, I guess they would not tax the supermarkets, I guess, for right now. So Winco wouldn't get taxed in the various other things. What they're trying to do, though, and this is what the city councilors are saying here in the Daily Courier story. Councilors said they want more information on whether taxing large retailers to supplement public safety is legal. In general, the city would need to show a connection between large retailers and the demand they put on police and fire protection. Okay. So I guess if you go to Walmart, if crime happens at Walmart, because Walmart is 50 times bigger than any other maybe locally owned store there, then Walmart needs to, as the progressives like to say, pay their fair share. pay the fair share. But does this mean that every time there's any kind of crime that happens at a small, locally owned business, that all of a sudden you're saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, we had to pick up a dirtbag homeless person or a shoplifter at your place. And, yeah, we know you're small. But I don't know. Well, you know why they're thinking about doing this. They're figuring, like, you know, what's Walmart going to say? Walmart says, hey, fine, you know, we're still bigger and we still have lower prices than a lot of the locally owned businesses. And so, you know, we can just pass this along and make it part of it. But Grants Pass wouldn't be the only one. Portland has a 1% retail sales tax surcharge with the big businesses. They collect it for clean energy projects. What morons. But I digress. So we'll see if this is where the city of Grants Pass wants to go. Again, though, the challenge that they face is that a lot of people travel between Medford, Grants Pass, Medford, Medford, Ashland, blah, 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 blah. You know, they sit there. A lot of people that work in Grants Pass or live in Grants Pass work in Medford. So they'll come in here and they'll end up doing their shopping in Medford. I think in some cases, I would imagine even the big box stores would be concerned that it would be, well, no matter what you do, whatever you're taxing, you want less of. That's essentially what happens in the tax world. So if you're taxing big box sales, I guess you don't want many more big box sales. People will march with their feet to a certain extent. Even if it's a 0.5%, 1%, it's still something. And you still have to pay the nickel for Kate Brown's bag, right? The bag tax. Oh, boy. Anyway, so that's kind of the gist of where things are going right now. All the problems are solved in Ashland because they now have solar-powered trash cans and the city of Grants Pass wants to tax big-box stores. And the meanwhile, City of Medford downtown wants to talk about strong city movement. They're going to be doing a Zoom meeting next week on this, and the Downtown Medford Association. I have it here. I'm going to find that. I'll talk about that here in just a little bit, because some of the verbiage that these pointy heads that are going to be putting on the Zoom meeting, they're talking about the failed urban experiment. And to me, it sure sounds like they're trying to grease the skids for the 15-minute little downtown city prison. Your city prison neighborhood, you know, will get you out of the suburbs and will get you into the downtown where you really wanted to be all along. You just didn't know it. We got a lot going on, okay? It's 6:32. Eric Peters joins me next after news on Wheels Up Wednesday. This is the Bill Meyer Show on KMED, KCMD. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided. By Dish.
When you hire a contractor, the last worry you should have is, are they capable enough to handle the job? A well drilling contractor is no different, especially with tough drilling conditions Southern Oregon can encompass. Clouser Drilling invests in capable machinery, tooling, and personnel equipped to handle these conditions. They operate four modern rotary drill rigs with capabilities from air rotary, mud rotary, and drill and drive casing advancement systems. Combine this with over 50 years and thousands of wells drilled, and worry no more. Contact Clouser Drilling or visit Clouser Drilling.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerno with your NBC5 Morning News Update. Jackson County Public Health is issuing an overdose alert for accidental overdoses or opioid-related poisonings, particularly in regards to fentanyl. This is in response to law enforcement and emergency services reporting an increase in overdoses last week. They say to call 911 if you suspect someone is overdosing, and if naloxone is used, the person still needs medical attention because the effects are temporary. Then the Ashland City Council approves of an ordinance to amend a resolution which establishes design standards for small wireless facilities. According to the city, the revised resolution aims to provide clear guidelines for evaluating and approving small wireless facility applications in accordance with FCC regulations. Some people attending the meeting say they have concerns on how 5G will affect the public's health and the environment. Then the Fish and Wildlife Service is proposing killing 500,000 barred owls in order to protect the threatened northern spotted owl from extinction. The culling of 470,000 barred owls would take place over a 30-year span. A group of 75 organizations wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Interior last week and urging her to drop what they call a reckless plan. A final decision is expected by early summer. That's a look at your morning headlines for NBC5 News. I'm Natalie Cerna, and have a great Wednesday.
Do you owe the IRS back taxes you can't afford? Are your finances underwater? First Response Resolution in Eagle Point solves tax problems. Their CPA will represent you with the IRS and defend your rights as a taxpayer. Visit firstresponseirs.com to schedule your free consultation.
Joel here at Butler Ford, and if you're looking for a big truck with a small payment, I got you covered. Ford Super Duties are back in stock with lease deals where you can get a Ford F-250 for only $445 a month. For $445 a month, you can now tow and haul with a brand new big shiny F-250. Nobody knows how to make lease deals work on a Ford truck like Butler Ford. That's why businesses and individuals have been coming to us for years when they want a new truck for a low lease payment, like $445 a month on a new Ford F-250. And lease payments are even lower on F-150 and Ford Escapes. Butler says yes to big discounts and rebates. Butler says yes to giving you more for your trade. Butler says yes to $445 a month on a Ford Super Duty. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where you know we've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned hybrid, and EV.
42-month lease payments at 7,500 miles per year with 97.48 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer.fee on vehicle with a cap cost of $48,125 on approved financing through Ford Credit. Offer expires 4/5/24.
Freddy's Diner in Old Town Eagle Point has a menu designed to appeal to everyone in the family. Choose from 13 hearty burgers served with fresh-cut fries, crisp and moist pressure-fried chicken, hand-dipped fish and chips, beer-battered prawns, sandwiches, steaks, salads, and more. Dine in or check out the menu online. Call in your order, and it'll be waiting for a quick and easy pickup. Support your local restaurants. Freddy's Diner on Main in Old Town Eagle Point.
Open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day for lunch and dinner. 106.3 KMED. 99.3 KCMD. And this is the Bill Meyer Show.
Wheels up Wednesday. Eric Peters out on the road this morning with a cold. I think you caught it during Mental Illness Visibility Day on Sunday. Isn't that right?
That must have been it. Either that or I didn't take my horse paste.
Oh, okay. There we go. I can send you some horse paste. I'll get you some in the mail. I think I can still send that in, in the mail for you. By the way, you'll be happy to know that the FDA has decided to take down that post in which they were under great pressure. Because
I saw that.
Yeah, they were wrong. Of course, they were wrong. In fact, most of what the government did was wrong over COVID time, at least what they were trying to do. And this whole thing, I was like, stop it, y'all. You ain't a horse. You know, all that kind of thing. And
even down to the folksy language that they try to use.
Oh, yeah. Well,
stop it, y'all.
Yeah, anytime I hear y'all, I'm about ready to deduct 15 IQ points or so anytime I hear that.
Well,
it's just the
when
snark.
It's coming from some carpet-bagging Yankee, more than likely, and I say that as somebody who lives in the South.
And that's what I mean, because most of the people that are saying y'all, they're actually from the South. They're they're Northerners. They're Yankees. Heck with those Yankees, all right? Anyway, I'm out of the Northwest. What do I care, okay? Eric Peters is automotive journalist, of course, and genius over at epautos.com there. And I wanted to talk about this. Of course, you actually have an article up there about Mental Illness Visibility Day. Do you really think Biden meant to do that? I don't think he knows what he's doing there. I think they just shoved the executive order in front of him and he just signs it. You know that.
Well, he's either lying or it's just another example of his dementia in action. And I don't know how you tell the difference. You know, he was asked specifically about it by a reporter and he claimed he didn't do that. That mm-hmm. was his verbatim response. So either he's just overtly lying or he's literally so senile he has no idea that that's exactly what he did do.
Or it could be a little bit of both. This is, still a politician, even if he is an elderly, doddering politician. Okay. All right. Now, what are your thoughts this morning with Tesla? Tesla has just been getting pounded in the stock market. And to me, it's not schadenfreude because I'm going like, oh, because I've had so much criticism of Elon Musk, who I do think is sort of a transhumanist Satanist type, but
the outfit gave him away, huh?
Yeah. Well, you remember that one, that Halloween outfit? Yeah. It's like sometimes it's what we call in this world a clue, okay?
Yeah.
All right. But be that as it may, the stock's been getting pounded for about 5, 6, 7%. Billions of dollars being lost by a lot of investors right now. And he can't hide it much longer because sales are going down of the Tesla cars because the EVs are having trouble in general. And the hype that he's been pushing out there for many, many years about, hey, we're going to have all these electric vehicle trucks, you know, the big semi-type mm-hmm. trucks there. And I think they only have a handful of superchargers and only a handful of the trucks delivered. But he was promising investors, what, 50,000 or so by this time, I think?
Well, something like that. And, of course, the Cybertruck has been a Titanic epic flop as well. But it goes beyond Tesla. I was reading something earlier today about the almost 70-day inventory that General Motors has of its various electric vehicles that it can't sell. And, you know, this is a problem across the board for all of these manufacturers that have been essentially backed into a corner and made to produce these vehicles for which there really isn't much of a market. The number of EV registrations is going down, not up, because the pool has been exhausted. You know, the initial group of people who thought it was cool and, more importantly, who had the money to spend on these things, they bought their EVs, and that leaves the rest of us who, you know, either can't afford it or don't want it.
Yeah, the early adopters are all in. No problem with that. There's nothing wrong with being an early adopter. You know, it can be cool if you think it works for you. And I would imagine most of this is still being sold in California right now because of the forcing and also the early adopting. And frankly, as we talked about before, Southern California is actually a perfect place for an EV, for the most part, when you're talking about climate, because it never really gets too hot or too cold, right? That's it.
Yeah, well, fundamentally, though, this isn't even about electric cars per se. It's about expensive cars.
Mm-hmm.
There are only so many people in the market who can afford to spend $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 on a vehicle.
And what is the average interest rate on a car loan these days? Do you happen to know? I'm just spitballing on you.
I don't know.
Because, we're looking at mortgages that are at about just under 7% right now. I would figure that that car loans would probably be more expensive, wouldn't they?
Well, even leaving that aside, let's say that the interest rates on a loan are zero. Everybody's paying, about 15 to 20% on the low end, more for groceries and for practically everything else. So incomes have not been keeping pace with that. And it makes a $50,000 or $60,000 car even less affordable for most people than it was at one time. There is a reason why the luxury brands, BMW, Mercedes, Lexus, these are small brands relative to, say, Honda and Toyota, because most people are not in a financial position to be able to afford a luxury car purchase. And in terms of the cost, that's what we're dealing with electric vehicles. The fact that they're battery-powered is incidental.
Well, I know that there's a lot of sticker shock going on out there. My sister-in-law ended up having did I tell you how my sister-in-law got in a minor wreck a few weeks ago? Did I tell her?
She didn't.
Had a Chrysler minivan. And had a problem, went off the road, and it was minor damage. But remember I was telling you that maybe
you did, and they were going to total it over this relatively trivial, what looked to be repairable damage.
And they did total it. The insurance company just totaled it because the insurance companies were just saying, hey, this is going to cost way too much. And yet it was technically pretty minor damage. And everybody else was saying it's minor until the insurance company looked at it. Oh, no, you got to total it. Right.
Yeah.
And I guess this has to do with the rising costs of repairs that have been doing this, too. But she ended up getting a new one, and it was like about $50,000. And it's how many people can go out there and afford $50,000 at a pop rent? I paid $50,000 for my my first new home, about 30 years ago. It wasn't that long ago, and I had a whole house and a lot too, to go with it.
Inflation is bad, but it doesn't account for all of it or even most of it. It used to be that minivans were typically utilitarian vehicles, and they were bought by people who needed a family vehicle. And they cost around $20,000, not that long ago. Now they're $50,000 for a freaking minivan.
And frankly, it could be more if you want to get the hybrid version of it, those sort of things. And I tried to convince, I didn't know she went and did this, but she still got the extended warranty. It's like, oh man, don't do that.
it might not have been a bad thing. That's a case-by-case thing. Sometimes those are very shady and disreputable. Other times they're not. You really have to read the paperwork and know what you're doing, though, before you agree to buy one of them.
How can you know if it's a good deal on an extended warranty?
Well, do your due diligence. See who's issuing the warranty in the first place, whether they're a reputable company, and what specifically is covered and what the caveats are for that. And these days with a modern vehicle, it's oftentimes actually pretty wise to buy it because let's say you spend $2,000 for the extended warranty. Well, if the transmission croaks out on you in one of these modern vehicles, the transmission replacement can easily be $3,500.
Oh, okay. So if you got a CVT, get the extended warranty, right?
Not a bad idea. Yep.
Now, to be fair about this though, it has a factory 5-year warranty. So I'm figuring, boy, factory 5-year warranty. Gosh, why not buy a warranty? An extended warranty perhaps in the third or fourth year instead of buying it right away. Does that make sense?
It does. I guess it depends, again, what the terms and conditions are. I'm sure it will vary depending on what the mileage is at the time that the policy goes into effect.
Okay. Eric Peters with me, epautos.com. We're talking transportation every Wednesday. We call it Wheels Up Wednesday. Hey, we were talking about EVs and Tesla here just a moment ago, and you have an article called The No Cash Charge. What is the system trying to tell us that you cannot pay someone actual American money to charge your EV? What's the story here?
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting thing, and not many people are aware of it, and so I've tried to publicize it because I do think it's important. We're all used to going to a gas station and, handing the guy $20. If you want to pay for gas with cash, you can do that. It's just been something that people have done for as long as there have been cars. But when it comes to electric vehicles, the only way that you can pay is via an app on your phone that's connected to an account of yours that then debits your account. So I think it creeps me out because it's a way for them to exercise another form of control over you, in this case financially. You can't just hand somebody some cash and get what you need. You have to go through this electronic process, which, of course, they control. The take-home point here is just like the power, it's a centrally distributed thing. It comes from a big utility plant, Well, the financial system is also centrally controlled, so it's another mechanism by which they can exert control over our ability to move freely, in my opinion.
Could you see a situation in which at some point it'll be, all right, have you paid your insurance? All right.
Yes.
Oh, you haven't paid your insurance? All right, so we will not allow you to charge your phone.
Your phone.
That's kind of Freudian, isn't it?
Is that
right?
Outlandish? Given what we've experienced over the last 4 years or so, is it that outlandish to put forward the notion, well, I posted a mean tweet this morning, and that got flagged, and then I go to charge my EV, but my card won't work because I violated somebody's community guidelines.
And you're not allowed to leave your 15-minute climate-friendly, equitable community in the state of Oregon.
Plus, it's a way for them, you know, it's another tracking mechanism, because they'll know every single time, they'll know where you are charging, they'll know how much charge you got. It's just another piece of data, in fact, a pile of data that they can have and potentially use against you. And again, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it might have sounded paranoid to say this stuff, but given the people that we're dealing with, I don't want them knowing every last little detail of my comings and goings. Do you?
Not if I can help it. That's the one thing I do love about cash. Anonymous, okay? Really good stuff. Eric, you have an article up there, Presumptive Idiots, and I've wondered where this came from. The presumptive idiots, and this has to do with the trend that you can't start cars without pushing the brake down, right?
Yeah, that's one of them. If you've gotten into a new car, or even a recently made car lately, you'll know it's no longer a matter of just getting in and starting it and going. There's all these things you have to comply with and agree to before the stupid car will let you do anything. You know, there's the lawyer screen on the LCD display that pops up. Okay, I agree to the terms and services. You know, and then it takes a second or two for it to process that before you can turn the radio on. If you put it in reverse, the radio will shut itself off or turn the volume down so you can't hear what's going on.
Wait a minute. I haven't heard about that one. You're trying to tell me you back up and the radio turns itself down or
for
turns
safety.
It off? Oh, okay.
And if you try, here's one of my all-time favorites. If you, you know, people of our vintage who learned how to drive before there were advanced driver assistance technologies, sometimes you might want to crack open the door and look at the curb to get a sense of where you are in relation to the curb and back the car up, right?
Oh, I've done that hundreds of times over my life. You bet.
Sure. Well, and in a lot of the new cars, if you try that, the computer will throw the transmission into park.
Really?
Gosh,
yes. Gosh, I love smart technology. I really do. Okay. You know, the thing about the is this something which is actually like required by fiat, you know, regulatory state, or is this something that maybe the lawyers have encouraged the car companies to do? You know, what actually grew
it's
this?
All of those things.
Oh.
You know, at one time there was some pushback from the car companies, but now, if anything, the car companies are even more eager to force this sort of thing off because it's become voguish. It's become cool to show just how safe the car is. You know, you watch new car commercials. They don't tell you, oh, look how sexy this car is. Look how fun it is to drive. It's how it keeps you safe.
Yeah. Hey, look, I can have sex in my Tesla while we're going down the I-5. And look at me.
Except, you know what? I take it back a little bit. You may have seen that Ford commercial where there's a mother and her kid, and they're having a conversation and not paying attention to what's going on because I think it's a Ford, is self-driving its way down the road.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. Until it piles itself underneath the semi in front of it, doesn't see it. Okay. All right. Eric Peters, epautos.com. We're talking about some of the articles that are going there right now. Always good stuff to read, for sure. Let me go to the phones, Eric, because anytime somebody wants to ask you a question, I'm going to let them do it. Hi, you're on with Eric. Who's this? Welcome.
This is Jean.
Hello, Jean. You have a question for Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah. What year of a used car did they start putting all this junk in?
Well, there wasn't any specific year. It's too bad, right? Wouldn't it be nice if we knew that, hey, all you have to do is go back to, say, oh, I don't know, 2010, but it's not like that. You have to go back to roughly now, the early 2000s. That's when this stuff started to begin to kudzu creep into circulation. And at first, it was chiefly in the higher end cars, the luxury brand cars. They used it as a way to differentiate the higher end cars from the lower tier cars.
Mm-hmm.
But by roughly about 2015, pretty much every new car has, to one degree or another, some of this technology in it.
Now, Gene, you have a 59 Edsel, right? You're driving a 1959 Edsel, isn't that right?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to figure.
A 2006 Toyota Camry.
Oh, Camry.
Well, you're fine then. And by the way, you know, 59 Edsel, maybe it's not the best looking car, but it's actually not that bad a car.
By the way, when they talked about it being a Lemon, it was really the look of the front end, but it was actually a decent car. But actually, the early 2000s, like he was mentioning, Gene, appreciate the call, okay? Let me go to line three. Wheels Up Wednesday. Hi, who's this? Good morning. You're with Eric Peters.
This is Dan.
Hello, Dan. What's on your mind?
I just had a quick question. So some of the newer cars, you put them in drive, or the parking brake's on, you put it in drive, and you give it a little bit of gas, the parking brake releases. So to me, it's like the safety of the parking brake is defeated by that. So like if a kid jumped in there, actually got it in park or something, the like brake doesn't
Well, yeah, it's hold. No longer what he's talking about is now ubiquitous. They have replaced what used to be called the emergency brake, which was a grab handle typically that you would pull on, or a foot lever that you would push down on, with a parking brake, which is electronically actuated, which you don't really have any control over. It's, you know, you push a button, and that causes an actuator to engage the brake. But, you know, you don't have the ability to actually modulate or control it yourself. And it's just one more way that they have taken a little bit more control away from you and given it over to a computer.
But what you noted, caller, is that, you know, with the what type of car are you seeing when you hit the gas and then the brake lets off? That's kind of a hill-holding function, isn't it?
No, it's more of the parking brake that you put on. It's released like in a Chevy, a brand-new Chevy pickup or whatever.
Oh,
yeah, right. A lot of the new cars that I test drive have that.
Oh, okay. All right. It's a good point. Thank you for making it, and thanks for the call. 770-5633. Eric Peters with me this morning. Hello. Who's this? You're with him.
Yeah, good morning. This is Terry.
Hey, Terry. Fire away.
Yeah. Well, it's not just in cars, too. You know, I have a dual-sport motorcycle that if you put the kickstand down on it, it shuts your engine off automatically.
Yep.
Or it won't let you start the engine if you're not in neutral and just have the clutch in. So it's not just cars. It's motorcycles. It's everywhere you look.
He's completely right about that. I had a BMW bike to evaluate a few months ago, and I went to get gas for it. I can't remember exactly what the deal was, but you know, ordinarily, popping open the gas filler lid is easy. It's a mechanical thing. You pop it open.
Yeah.
This thing had some electronic interface, and it took me like 10 minutes to figure out what I had to do in order to get the lid on the gas tank to pop open.
Seriously, that's just wild.
Yeah.
Do you think that the technology is maybe getting too smart for our own good, really?
I think it's getting too stupid for our own good.
Well, that was what I was implying. I was sarcastically saying smart, you know?
Yeah. You know, unless you really are an idiot, none of this stuff is necessary. And in fact, it's at cross purposes with the putative reason for it. You know, it makes operating the vehicle in many ways, in my opinion, less safe because it's more frustrating and you have less actual control over the vehicle.
Hmm. You know, you're talking about the lack of the parking brake or the emergency brake handle, which we've had for a long time. Or even if you go back to the 60s, 70s, and 80s, or, you know, a lot of times the American cars still had a push pedal, you know, for the for the parking brake, and then it would let off if you hit the put the car in gear. Sometimes they would release like that. My dad's old Cadillac used to do that. But the one thing about the emergency brake is that it truly does work as an emergency brake. Now, on my in my 2010 Chrysler, it still has one of those. Yeah, the PT Cruiser was the same design from like 2002 with just a few minor changes to improve things, but it was essentially the same car. It was an old design, really. And very old design. And I am totally, if I were to have a total failure of the braking circuit on that car, which I don't because I maintain it well, but I've been able to, and I would try. I could sit there and come to a total smooth stop using the handbrake. But you can't do that with all these cars that have the push the button for the parking brake, right? You can't do it.
No, I mean, it's a rare circumstance that might arise, but if it does, and you push that parking brake, more than likely it's going to lock up the rear wheels, and that'll put the vehicle into a skid.
Yeah, and then you're really going to be having some problems, right? So I kind of miss that parking brake. I like the parking brake, the ability to do that. Vanagon, of course, the vintage Vanagon, it's so old, and there's no smart technology on that at all. You know, a diesel with no DEF tank or DEF tank, whatever they call that stuff, you know. It just has an engine. That's all that's in it. Hey, Eric, the review for this week, what did you take out? The 2024 what? What were you driving
on the road? Honda Ridgeline, which is a really neat take on the truck concept. It's really just a Honda Pilot with a bed. But, you know, It's exactly what most people need a truck for. It's got a bed that's big enough to hold two motorcycles, and then underneath the bed, because it's not really a truck, you got another storage place, which they were able to make room for because, again, it's based on a crossover platform, and it does not have a big, huge rear axle underneath there and the heavy-duty suspension that you'd find underneath a typical truck. And the really neat thing about it, it makes it more of a truck than some of the trucks that it competes with. It still comes standard with a V6, which you can't get anymore at all. Ford Ranger.
They got rid of it all.
Canyon.
Yeah.
They're all four-cylinder only now.
Uh-huh. And so how has it managed to keep its V6 given all the compliance that is coming down from Uncle Sam's?
Well, because it's relatively old. The current model dates back to about 2017. So, again, it's one of these vehicles that's kind of a mastodon that's still stomping around in the tundra, you know, waiting to be felled by the cold temperatures. Next year, more than likely, Honda is going to update it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it, too, goes the way of the rest and ends up with some kind of a turbo hybrid setup rather than the V6.
You have been a big fan of looking at some of these vehicles that are out there that are actually pretty old design that have not been updated for 7, 8, 9, 10 years or something like that, but yet they're still really good cars. Besides the Ridgeline, what are some other ones that have not been updated? Hence, you can still get a car that maybe doesn't nag you quite so much, still may have a V6 or maybe even a V8, depending on the truck. I don't know. Are there any left?
See. Boy, the ranks are rapidly dwindling. You know, the Camry is gone now. It's become a hybrid. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Tacoma, which was pretty much my favorite, which was my favorite midsize pickup truck, that's gone. The Mazda Miata is still hitting the sweet spot. And, you know, you go back to these vehicles that were last redesigned circa 2017-ish, and they're still a lot like the vehicles that were being made circa 2005 and so. And they don't have a lot of the stuff that we carp about all the time. But they're all going away very quickly. And, you know, in another year or two, there won't be any of them left at all.
Yeah, but this is the time to look at something like that, because I have to tell you, the more of these mechanics that are tearing apart automobiles are really talking about what they're seeing a trend of smaller engines with dual turbos on them not having great longevity. It seems to be something
it
we're starting
to reason. You know, you've got a pretty big vehicle like this Ridgeline, which is a mid-sized truck, but it's actually about the same dimensionally as a half-ton truck that was made in the 90s. You know, it's 210 inches long. It's a pretty big vehicle. And to have a vehicle that big and that heavy with a little four-cylinder engine, it's just it's not a sensible thing. I mean, they can get the power up there using these turbos, but that imparts stress to the engine's internals, and it adds complexity to the engine, and that increases the odds that you're going to have a failure and the expense of the failure when it happens. I'd far rather have a V6 if your premise is, okay, I'm going to buy this vehicle, and I'd like to be driving it for, like, the next 15 years maybe.
And it is awesome that they have been able to figure out how to get, 300 horsepower and 325 foot-pound of torque, rather, out of a 2 or 2.4 four-cylinder engine. But it's not free, right? There's a cost to something like that.
And really, there's very little benefit. In my review, which people can look at on the site, I point out that the mileage difference between, say, the new Tacoma's turbo four-cylinder engine and the Ridgeline's V6 engine, and they're comparably powerful, is negligible. It's about a 2 or 3 miles per gallon difference. So what difference does that make to you as the owner of the vehicle?
Because you'll probably, that 2 or 3 mile per gallon difference in fuel economy may end up paying out in the long run for the longevity of the drivetrain.
Sure.
When you think about that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. By the way, that Honda V6, you know, it's the last readout just about of that brilliant V6 that made the Accord sedan one of the best sedans that you could buy for many, many years. And, of course, you can't get that V6 in the Accord anymore. You can still get it in the Ridgeline, so gather ye rosebuds while ye may.
Yeah, there were some amazingly good engines made in the V6 world. I think of that, we have a 2002 4Runner here for the radio station engineering vehicle. That thing is just bulletproof. It really is.
Yep.
And it doesn't have great power, you know, the V6 from that 4Runner. But it's just solid.
It's what you want. You know, it's reliable. It gets the job done. It doesn't cost you much money to have it. That's the formula.
So, what do you think you're going to be taking a look at next week, huh?
I'm not 100% sure. Again, I apologize for not having consulted our schedule before we got on the air, but I'm pretty sure I'm getting a Lexus RX. But don't quote me on that. We'll have to talk about it next week.
Okay. Has that been updated or not? You know,
You know, I haven't done my research yet, so I can't say. That too has been changing. Now it is a turbo hybrid. It doesn't have the V6 anymore either.
Okay.
It used to come standard in that thing. And what a great V6. You know, my mom actually, I encouraged her to get one way back, the original RX300, way back in 1998. My sister is still driving that thing.
Still driving it. So once again, solid design. Really was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so hopefully the new one is not, the 2024 is not with a twin turbo three cylinder, right?
We'll find out more next week.
All right. Yeah. What is that now? The twin turbo three cylinders, that's the one that are going on to the Chevy Traverses and things like that, right? Isn't that where they're putting those?
Yeah, it's and the Buick Enclave, I think, or Encore. Always get these names confused.
Yeah.
I think it's a 1.3 liter turbo three cylinder.
Yeah, and you know, those were some of the engines that I'm seeing the mechanics that are on YouTube tearing apart engines and showing, hey, look at what happened to this engine here. You know that those kind of guys.
I mean, it's literally smaller than the typical four cylinder motor engine in a motorcycle. You know, four cylinder inline in a big cruiser bike that weighs maybe 700 or 800 pounds. It has got a bigger engine than they're putting in these 3,000-something-pound crossover SUVs.
I think it is well worth so watch out for the three-cylinder engines in many cases. They are having some problems with them because, once again, you're having to really goose the turbo boost on them to move these larger vehicles. And the other thing I'm still reading a lot of horror stories about, are they getting better with the continuously variable transmissions, the CVTs? I was talking with the people from Dusty's Transmission, and he was saying the other day that they are getting a little bit better, but you really got to maintain them a lot to keep them
reliable.
They're
getting better, but they're never going to be as good as conventional automatic because they have a built-in weakness. In order to be able to continuously vary the range is you've got to have this adjustable belt pulley system. That's how the transmission works, to alter the ratios effectively as you're driving. It results in metal fatigue. Eventually, that belt or band is going to break. And when it breaks, that's it. It's not a repairable thing. You have to replace the transmission.
Yeah, it's pretty catastrophic about that. But he does say you really do have to maintain them much more, in fact, sooner than the manufacturer usually recommends. And also, if you have any vehicle that says that the transmission is totally sealed, forget about it because that's not true. Get it serviced anyway, right? I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Well, it's all about what they define as lifetime. You know,
yeah.
I mean, most people hear that term and they think, oh, lifetime, that means pretty much effectively forever. But if you read the fine print, it typically means 100,000 miles.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So if you wanted to last more than 100,000 miles, change the fluid. Okay?
Yes.
There we go. Eric, thank you so much as always. EPAutos.com. Great talk, great site, great people and commentary going on over there, too. And we'll talk next Wednesday, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
4 minutes after 7, this is KMED, KMED HD1 Eagle Point, Medford, KCMD Grants Pass.